Hey there, sex fans! Welcome back! Today is Wednesday, June 30th, 2010, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge, with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. That would be me.
Oh, he's a little guy, kind of funny looking.
Hey, I resemble that remark. So, today is the very last day of my special Pride Month spectacular. I promised you at the beginning of the month that we'd have a kick-ass lineup of guests, and I kept that promise. We started off with a visit to the lair of the Queen of Kink Couture, Tonya Winter. Then we chatted with the exquisitely edgy photographer Boots Bryant. Then, the brilliant songsters John and Cass, a.k.a. the Wet Spots, thrilled us with their sexy music. And now, I have the pleasure of welcoming...
I give you the one, the only, the mistress.
Doh! That was my line. Okay, now the cat is out of the bag, so to speak. I can confirm the rumors. It's true, my favorite sex columnist, blogger, and podcaster, the internationally acclaimed pro-dom Mistress Matisse, is in the house. She's here as part of the Sex Wisdom podcast series, don't you know? This is the series where we chat with researchers, educators, clinicians, pundits, and philosophers who are making news and reshaping how we look at our sexual selves.
We run a pretty tight ship here.
You can say that again. Matisse has someone special with her today, who she will introduce in a moment. But first, one word of caution. You may hear some whining and whimpering in the background of today's program. Those sound effects are provided by my dog, Ginger. I tell you this because I don't want you to get the wrong idea and think that was me. Although, God knows, the incredibly sexy and oh-so-entertaining Mistress Matisse makes even me, a big fat homo, weak in the knees.
Yeah, you got that right.
So glad you concur. Matisse invites you to enter her world and visit her on one of her many websites. MistressMatisse.blogspot.com, MistressMatisse.com, or read her column, Control Tower at thestranger.com. Today's podcast is once again brought to you by the granddaddies of male masturbation toys, the amazing Fleshlight and Fleshjack. For those of you who have never seen one of these brilliant devices, let me describe it to you. It looks like a huge flashlight, thus the very clever names, don't you know? Inside the durable plastic case, there is a soft, fleshy inside called Super Skin, and trust me, this stuff is aptly named. It's phenomenal. But that's just the beginning. What makes the Fleshlight and Fleshjack so freaking amazing is that you get to design and personalize just about every aspect of the unit you purchase. Now, what other toy company allows you to do that? And ladies, here's a tip. This is the perfect gift for your man.
Sir, you have no call to get snippy with me. I'm just doing my job here.
No, honestly. You know how I keep talking about the mutual joys and the important information shared when a couple masturbates together, right? Well, this is the ideal masturbation toy for him. Check it out and see for yourself. I know you will agree nothing beats a Fleshlight. Look for their banner in the sidebar of DrDickSexAdvice.com. You will be so glad you did. Okay, on with the show.
Mistress Matisse, it's an honor to welcome you to DrDickSexAdvice.com. Our get-together is long overdue, don't you know? And I've been waiting on you since Max and I recorded our podcast a year ago, April. You sure like to make your men beg and grovel for a real long time, huh?
It's going to be like this, isn't it? Yeah.
Now that you're here, darling.
And I got the keys.
Thank you for having me. I am very pleased to be here.
Oh, good, good, good. So now that you're finally here, would you like to say hello to the nice people?
I don't want to say hello to nice people. I want to say hello to the perverts.
Oh, good, because there's a shitload of them. They're my favorite folks.
Yeah.
So, and I noticed that you brought a friend along with you. I think I recognize him. Oh, my God. It's the fabulous Monk of Twisted Monk. My house is full of kink royalty, and I'm so honored.
Oh, royalty.
Royalty.
I thought it was more like the Joker. From Batman, though.
Batman.
Not, yeah. Okay. Not like the other one. Yeah, I unfortunately have to, I'm the one over here that when Matisse gets you down some path and it becomes too, like, embarrassing for me, I have to, like, stop being like, no, or insert some bad humor. Or...
You're my color commentary.
I'm your Ed McMahon, that's right.
Yeah, you're my off-color commentary.
That's funny. Okay.
So there you go. So before we begin, I want to ask you a question, Matisse, that I've asked all the local folks that I've chatted with so far in this series. Bondage Lessons Max, Lady Lydia, Monk, our beloved Monk, Tony Buff, Tonya Winter, Clayton Hibbert among them. Is the Pacific Northwest in general and Seattle in particular a hotbed of perversion, or is it just my wishful thinking?
Well, I could talk about, like, you know, what kind of fantasies you might be spinning around. but I think it's a hotbed of perversion, and a, you know, or a hot dungeon of perversion, or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, I think we have a great community and very active community and
it's
very well
true.
Organized community here. Yeah,
it's true.
It is. I moved here because of that. So
is that right?
Yeah.
Is that
I had in 1992. You would kind of hear rumors across the country that Seattle was the place, and I'm like, well, guess I'm going there. So I came, and here I am.
So we're going to get more to how you became Mistress Matisse in a bit. So, but before we begin, I want to do some semi-obligatory adulation.
I don't know what you think semi.
Go big or go home day. We will notice that he is wearing his Pope outfit.
Yes,
so
right, exactly. That's right. You are my favorite sex columnist and blogger. I've been an avid fan of your Control Tower column in The Stranger since shortly after I moved up here 10 years ago, and the post and podcast featuring the irrepressible Monk on your own website, mistressmatisse.blogspot.com, are the real deal.
Oh, shucks.
It is, isn't it, though?
She is the shiznit.
Oh, stop. You too.
Oh, Shazam. I'm particularly fond of the fact that you have this matter-of-fact style when it comes to sex and kinky sex in particular. This appears to come very easy to you. Is that an accurate representation?
What? Don't snicker over there. You know, the answer is no. It doesn't come easy.
Uh-huh.
I think it's human nature to kind of... to only see things you want to see about sex, and to only see things from your point of view, and to think that, you know, all of one's own goals and motivations are kind of lofty and noble, and everyone else's are base. And
uh-huh.
It takes many, many years of, like, falling on your butt to realize, actually, no, I'm not inherently noble. So I've sort of learned to be mercilessly frank with myself,
mm-hmm.
because I don't want to make the same mistakes over and over again, and so I kind of do that with someone else as well.
But you are so at ease. I mean, that came with time then?
Oh,
know?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm kind of like those figure skaters, you know, make it look easy, but you know my butt has been on that ice a lot. So there are no mistakes that I scold people for that I have not made myself.
Yeah.
That's
so many of our sex blogging colleagues, especially the ones with degrees, I'm sorry to say, seem to go out of their way to make their sex talk overly serious and stuffy. There should be a law against that. Do you agree?
No, I think they should continue being as stuffy and serious as possible so that you and I sound better.
Now there's a ticket.
You know,
there
I'm
is.
A capitalist, Dick. We've got to get out of the market. We'll just dominate everything.
Right, right.
They do. I think they're trying to justify themselves, maybe a little bit of like embarrassment about
right,
the topic. But
right.
I'm a professional
yeah.
pervert. I don't have a degree
yeah.
in anything, and
right.
so I don't need to do that.
But, you know, I think I was mentioning this, Monk, when you and I were doing our podcast together, and that sometimes I get reviled by the people who come to Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. You know, if you're a real PhD, you wouldn't say cock and cunt.
You'll use his words.
A real. What is the word? See, in our
world, yeah.
You feel it real and true in front of something, it's like saying asshole. Like, he's a real and true dominant master. Yeah, it's like, you're an idiot.
And in your world, I mean, if you don't say cock and cunt, then... you're a real idiot.
Actually, almost too. In our world, it's easy to you don't want to be so base. It's like, no, we'll actually talk like adults, so we can talk like intelligent adults, because in our world, they're all expressions like, yeah, and so like I took my cock and I like shoved it in her butt, and then I did this, and then I did this, and it was really hot. But it's like, let's talk frankly.
Certainly, yeah, we try.
But no, but not clinically.
Yeah, but not clinically, no.
And it's not like, you know, a hot porn blog either. So it's
right.
A fine line.
Yeah.
So maybe this would be a good place for me to ask you how you became, how does Monk say it, the one, the only Mistress Matisse.
Well, I went up the mountain, you know, and found the little mist-shrouded...
Was it burning?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I was really going with more like the Asian imagery,
the kung fu thing.
I see. No, you went to Master Yoda, and
yeah,
you trained in the swamps,
I did.
And finally you could snatch the pebble, you know.
Something like, you know, I was kinky, and see, there you go. I was a sex worker before I was ever a pro dom. So I was like a stripper, I was an escort, all these things, and in my own life I was being kinky, and you know, I met other pro doms and people began to say, you know, you could do that, you could marry these two skills and talents and pleasures you seem to have, and so I mean, is that kind of the answer?
Yeah.
What's that line Joe uses?
I don't know.
She used that.
I preferred to ask. Joe Weldon.
Joe Weldon. She used it last week. Was like, I see going from stripping.
Yeah.
Being on someone is a lateral move.
She was talking about class structures and sex work, which is, you know, because, yeah, there was a ton of class structures and sex work, but she was remarking the fact that dancers and strippers and pro-doms are kind of roughly the same social class.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on how you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
But, that was her comment. So, yeah, it's not, moving from one sex work career to another is not that unusual.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So how long have you been at this, so to speak, as it were? Dog years.
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 Well, you know, I'm
long
29. You know,
uh-huh.
So I can't
right,
believe
so.
It's been that long. I have been a sex worker. I'm gonna say it for 23 years.
Goodness gracious, that's amazing.
Thank you.
Staying power, so to speak.
I'm determined. Yeah.
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 Right. And you said that you moved here. In the 80s? The
it was
early
not
80s?
The 80s. It was 1992.
1992. Okay, right. Okay.
I'm sorry, I'm being silly. Yeah, it was 1992.
And it wasn't for the grunge or the coffee?
No, it was not for the grunge. I mean, I wanted to leave the South, and I was kind of like, I made a list. I'm like, New York, Chicago, San Francisco. Where I'm going to get out of the South, somewhere interesting. Where do I want to go? And I actually was going up to Alaska for the summer to dance.
Really?
Yeah. Because I'd heard, there's no internet then, so you like kind of heard through the grapevine that, you make a lot of money in Alaska this summer. So I'm like, well, shit, I'll just get in my car and drive up there.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone told me I was crazy. And this guy I was living with at the time was like, you can't just up and go to Alaska. I'm like, oh, well, I'm going now.
For damn sure.
Tell me I can't go anywhere. So
never, ever, never say you. Word can't.
And indeed. You know of what you speak, I'm assuming.
Tell me, can't. So... And I drove through here, and it was so beautiful and green and pretty, and the people were beautiful, and I thought, okay. And I danced in Alaska summer, and then I put my beat-up piece of crap car on a transport ship and flew back down here and got a little teeny, teeny, teeny apartment in the U-District, and I've been here,
Well, I'm certainly glad that we wound up in the same town.
Yeah.
That's for sure. It makes me more comfortable knowing folks like you two are here. It does. It really does.
You shouldn't sleep at night, Dick.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're saying
bad
comfortable
idea.
For.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you get the keys to his place yet?
I got the keys, yeah.
Awesome.
So I'm going to gather that Matisse is not your given name. Is that right?
Well, yeah, actually, technically it is.
I gave it to myself.
Uh-huh.
No, it's certainly not the name my mama gave me.
Okay. So since this is your work name, why did you choose it as opposed to Gertrude or Agatha or Clytemnestra?
You know, I was so going to go with Gertrude. I was that close to going with Gertrude. I thought, you know, what could be sexier? And there was already a Mistress Gertrude.
Was there really?
In Kent.
Yeah. And she did that one thing with the gravy. I mean, she was specialist.
She was special. Yeah.
Wow.
I thought I can't possibly, I can never aspire to be that Mistress Gertrude. So I'll just have to settle for being Mistress Matisse.
So, but why Matisse? I mean, that's such a wonderful name.
It has those nice M's and S's in it. I mean, I think I was actually, I'm kind of walking around going, I'm going to do this, I should think of a name. As I recall, I was in a bookstore and just saw a bunch of art books laid out and thought, because I was walking around saying, Mistress Fern, no, that's not good. Mistress Basket, no. I mean, just like laying on all these random things. And I didn't want to be Mistress Damian, you know, like Dominatrix. I'm like, oh, so been done. So been
done. Yeah, the great idea. Or what was it, you know? Mistress, princess, goddess, butcher, worshipless of the, you know, the more...
The more honorifics you put in there, the bigger of a tweet you are.
Yeah.
I'm still going to get stoned for this podcast, I know that. People hate me for all these things I'm saying. So, yeah, it was a nice, sexy... I thought it would intimidate people who were too stupid to say it, and I was wrong about that, because people called up and asked for Mistress Madacy all the time. All the time. But it told me a lot right there, so I could work with that.
So,
And again, Mistress Picasso didn't sound as right.
Mr. Jackson Pollock, not so much.
Yeah, really.
A little too wordy.
How about, why mistress as opposed to lady, which I know some other pronouns use?
I was like, actually wearing a pointy hat with a veil on Pretty, my lady, what's that? I'm just like,
Because if that was the case, I'd have to fire the lute.
And that's, you know, Lady Lydia is and she's a terrifying dom. You should not underestimate her by any means, because she'll just destroy you. But I just, lady just didn't really resonate with me.
Okay.
Mistress Matisse.
But there isn't, if you call yourself mistress or you call yourself lady, there's an implication?
They're all honorifics. They're just
Right. There's no licensing bureau.
too bad.
You're only classified for a mistress or, you know, I'm sorry. You need to go to special classes for that one and get a special handling permit to get that up there.
Were you hoping to be a lady one day, ma'am?
Because I tried to go for lady and they wouldn't let me. They're like, oh, so, wow, you need some really special classes for this one.
So let's get to some sex wisdom, Mistress Matisse style. I've been clipping some of your columns for almost a year now in anticipation of actually having this opportunity to talk to you. And you talk about your fanatic followers.
I was going to say, is this the one with the restraining order that we need to talk about? I mean, the address was scribbled.
I couldn't come to her place, but she could come to mine. Yeah. That was the thing.
Ooh.
I'll start the car.
So in a column you titled The Politics of Blowjobs, you wrote, after my column about pussy eating, a number of men asked me, why don't you write about blowjobs? Let's see, because I don't actually have a cock? Unless you count the ones in my toy cabinet. But all right, in the spirit of fairness, let's talk about cocksucking. Blowjobs are a wonderful thing. The trouble is, for women, they're so heavily laden with cultural baggage. For a woman to take pleasure in cocksucking, she must first be able to recognize and then disregard sex-negative blowjob dogma. For example, I don't feel that putting my mouth on someone's cock is inherently inherently submissive thing to do. It can be, but everything in sex is about context. First, let me say, I'm truly disappointed to learn that you don't actually have a cock.
We would be so perfect for each other.
I'm telling you. And the next thing I don't want to hear is that monk doesn't have one either, because I'm going to shoot myself in the head.
He does, actually.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
It's only 4 inches.
Wide.
And I'm not a size queen, so... Lucky there.
You know, I said that too.
Yeah.
So, you're saying in that column that the problem some women might have with cocksucking has to do with being socialized with the message that good girls don't do that?
You know, I'm so far removed from being a good girl that I'm kind of a bad person to ask. I don't know if it's that so much in the, like, especially now, there's a lot of internet porn. It's about, like, facials and,
right.
like, you know, it's like...
Right. Throat fucking and...
Yeah,
right.
it's being packaged and sold as
right.
sort of a more dominant act,
right.
and that's fine.
Yeah.
But I think that's all you kind of think about. And if you, I mean, go back and start reading 70s feminist
right.
kind of, you know, it's like, there's a lot of things saying it's not, you know, it's not about good versus bad. It's about, like, you know, it, like, empowered and enlightened
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it's... I'm like, do you want your pussy eaten? Because
mm-hmm.
I think that it's kind of a, you know,
yeah.
six of one or something in the other situation.
Right.
But... So yeah, it's kind of just like it's dirty. It's degrading. It's you know, like that.
It's funny because I see this in my practice, my private practice sometimes. Women come in saying that their husbands, you know, are wanting them to blow them, and they're hesitant. And so we work at, you know, trying to dismiss some of the negative messages that they got about this part of the body, you know, like, ooh, it's icky and dirty and stuff like that.
And from the interjection side, from the opposite side, you know, having a penis and enjoying the blowjob, it's like, it, like you said, in the context of, like, yeah, it can be like a powerful, dominant, rah. Other time it's like, honey, I will do any of it.
Oh, clean your floor.
Oh, you want me to do what? Clean, you know, clean the roof? Yes, okay. Uh-huh. Oh, teeth? Ah! You know, it's like, you have my undivided attention at that moment.
And I have the most sensitive part of your anatomy and the most, powerful part of mine. Yeah.
Powerful part of mine.
Don't make me hurt you, yeah.
So, yeah, this whole, like, it's a submissive, it can play that, but the reverse also comes into play, too. Yeah.
So that's what I mean by context. It's like, yeah. It is what you make it.
It is. It is. But, you know, a guy who begs for it from his wife, you know, and then turns around and uses it as a weapon against her, like only whores do that, you know, when he's having a fight with her. You blew me and only a whore would do that. You know, I mean, I've
no,
seen
a whore would
that.
Have gotten money, actually. Yeah, exactly. As a matter of fact, yeah.
She would have done it, of course, but he would have walked away richer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a really funny thing about that. And but nowadays, it seems that a lot of young women are enjoying cocksucking, but not considering it actual sex. So I suspect that that has something to do with sex, the context of sex that you were writing about.
Well, no, what I was really talking about it from more like a dominant standpoint.
I see, got it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't give me, I have a whole riff about like actual sex versus not actual sex. That's so silly.
Eat, mate, cheating is, yeah, that's a
that's
whole,
just
that's,
really
a,
that, silly.
That's another thing, yeah.
But no, it's just like, you know, no, if I like have you like tied up and I have like a 10-pound weight hanging from your balls and I have nipple clamps on you and I have my mouth on your dick, you're not going to feel dominant. You're really not. And I'm not going to feel submissive in that context. I will just be down there and I'll just like tap that weight with my little finger and you will not feel dominant while I'm sucking your cock.
Yeah. Which gets me to
thinking. You're sweating.
Profusely, one might add. Which also gets me to thinking about, you know, gay men, straight men, and cocksucking. Like, I know a number of straight men who love to have their cock sucked. They don't care if it's a woman or a guy who does it, but they would never reciprocate. And when I quiz them about that kind of stuff, their thing is about, well, it is submissive. You know, that's what women do. And so I wouldn't do that, even though I might enjoy it, and I would even let the likes of you.
oh, wow, isn't that nice?
Yeah, it is. You know, and some guys are really worth it, and a lot of gay guys go after straight guys because, you know, they're easy. So to speak, as it were.
Oh,
it is. I mean, you just promise them a blowjob, and, you know, they're queer for 20 minutes.
I think we call it being gaysted.
Is that right?
I got so gasted last night. I drank a lot of PBRs. Next thing you know, yeah.
Somebody is hanging off my dick.
What can you do? You know.
What can you do?
I don't think there's a female equivalent word of that. I don't,
gasted?
You know.
Lesded.
I think it's buy for beers, where you're at a bar and you start making out with your female friend, or the other guys at the bar will start buying you drinks.
Oh, right. See,
you know
that.
You know, that happens, but it's not quite the same as...
No, it's not quite the same.
Getting gasted. So, anyway, we're down the rabbit hole.
All righty. So, moving right along, in a column that you wrote, titled, If It's Not One Thing, It's Your Mother, you wrote, I'm always amazed that people have the courage to rear children. Given that once you have them, anything people don't like about your offspring's sexuality becomes your fault. I heard a new twist on that today. Foot and leg fetishists stem from men sitting on the floor as infants, tugging furtively at the skirts of their obviously distant, unloving mothers. It's odd how no one pathologizes guys for liking boobs. But these are just variations on the sex-negative theme that BDSM in adult sexuality is a result of childhood abuse. Our families were dysfunctional, the theory goes, and thus we were twisted into a warped, unhealthy sexuality. BDSM people should look out work out our issues so that we can have normal sex, whatever that is, instead of damaging ourselves with all this kinky fuckery. So, why did your mother make you like this? And just for the record, I think guys with boob fetishes are indeed certifiable.
I met your mother, yeah, no.
She sent me to Catholic school for 12 years, is what she
is
did.
Well, yeah.
Right? Oh,
yeah.
That's what it is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, Catholics are all kinky fuckers. Yeah.
I'm a Catholic priest, you know.
I knew that you were. No, 12 years I went.
There you go.
Yeah.
And it shows.
Yeah.
Too.
So there you go.
And you wonder why I'm looking for a priest habit, you know?
That's right. There you go.
Yeah, that was probably, I mean, and I actually don't think that what our mothers did necessarily,
right.
You know, made us the way we are. I mean, I'm sure that played a part. But But certainly learning at a very young age to kind of like all these rituals and all this talk about sin and punishment,
mm-hmm, right.
And, you know, yeah,
right.
Like you can't
right.
Really
yeah.
Slow the process down. Any.
I love it. So why do you suppose that we have a need to demonize sex stuff that we don't understand or are afraid of?
Well, I don't think that we inherently do. I think we are carefully taught that by other people who have a vested interest
right.
In keeping us kind of from, you know, we had to focus on things like fighting wars and
right.
Working in factories and things.
Right.
And if we just think about our own selfish pleasure, how are people who, like, own us going to make any money off us?
Well, that's true enough.
And as you just said from the Catholic Church, how are we going to get our coffers full every Sunday for you
exactly.
To repent to?
Exactly.
If you have nothing to repent for,
exactly.
What, you know, how are we going to and, you know, keep that fund and keep us breeding more
exactly.
Workers and soldiers?
Right.
It's so true. I mean, it's such a, you know, culturally laden kind of thing that it's just, and it's bred in the bone, it seems to me. I mean, little kids, you know, can identify, you know, dirty and sexy stuff.
We
together.
Start getting best messages. I get the minute we come out of the fucking womb. It's
yeah.
Like, okay, and you're dirty. I mean, the original sin, for God's sake.
Exactly.
They'll get us off on this whole
yeah.
thing.
Yes,
but
right,
yeah,
right.
Anyway.
And of course, since there's a pathology, then there's always got to be an underlying cause. And who better to focus that on than our long-suffering parents?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
He said, into his hand. In a column that you titled Bridging Pleasure and Danger, you wrote, "It's almost Valentine's Day, and as usual, I have mixed feelings about it. You would think that I like VD better."
I'm calling it that, yeah.
"Since it's a holiday, and that can be celebrated with both chocolate and lingerie."
Ooh.
"However, I disagree with some of the sexual mythology. It propagates. Valentine's Day is supposed to be a special day for lovers, but if one wants to create a sexually intense experience, then those stuffed animals, lacy paper hearts, and sweet poetry are the wrong way to go. No, a sense of tension, uncertainty, even some risk is what is called for. Trust me on this, ladies. The intersection of pleasure and danger is something on which I am an expert."
I love it.
"Your recipe for spicing up a relationship is, if you want a sexually memorable occasion, ditch the saccharine sweet stuff and go for something unpredictable and with a little bit more bite. This is why we love you."
Did I bite you?
Yeah.
You have...
Wow.
I actually haven't bitten Richard yet.
I was going to say, we didn't. Yeah.
All in good time.
All in good time. I was going to say, bitch, get in line.
Real.
Nice.
You can't take us anywhere. Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, if you bring me a stuffed animal, I'm going to set it on fire. I just really don't like those things at all. And it's almost like you want to make children of us again. Like, these are like
right.
These are children's toys.
Right.
This is the, and
yes.
We're grown-ups.
Right.
We don't.
But it's funny that I mean people do kind of resort to, you know, an infantilism, you know, in terms of sexuality. A lot of, you know, vanilla folks do that, you know, just like babies and mommies and daddies and stuff like that.
Well, it reduces the tension around it. But
yes, I guess.
And there's something wrong with a little role play. You know, I'm
yeah,
not.
Right.
I don't stop there. But yeah, I think overall culturally, I mean, that's the only way we can. I mean, it's, I think Valentine's Day has become more sort of overtly sexy, but still, we had this national holiday, and the only way we can sort of do that without being uncomfortable about celebrating sexuality is to, as you say, kind of infantilize
well,
it.
Well, yeah, infantilize it, and we create, it's not like, you know, I love you, and I want to show you I love you by, you know, pinning you down and fucking the living snot out of you, okay? You know,
yeah.
Until we're just a big, wonderful sweaty heap. I love you, and I'm going to do this thing for you because it's gentle, and we take away all the teeth and the fang of our sexuality.
Yeah.
And again, this was all things, though, within our culture. We can't, you know, we can't say, no, you know what? Saying I love you leaves bruises. I'm sorry.
the truth of the matter is.
The special way that you do it, yeah.
You know?
But it's all good.
It's all good, you know, it's like, oh.
But if I had a nickel for every time someone told me that their white bread love life was stale and boring, I'd be a wealthy man.
I thought you did.
Oh. You know we do.
But folks seem to be resistant to thinking outside of the box, so to speak, when it comes to sex. So I assume that this is your experience as well. I mean, do the people who approach you for your professional services, are they wanting to live on the edge for a little while before they return to their ho-hum?
Well, you know, because I'm polyamorous, I can understand that you have different relationships and they serve different needs.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're in a long-term relationship with somebody, you know, after 20 years, it's like, it is reasonable.
Yes.
Things happen, things change.
Yes.
It's not like it was in the first 6 months.
Yeah.
And you don't expect that. You come to value other things in that partner, and hopefully you still have a happy sex life together.
Right.
But yeah, it's not going to be quite as, like, risk and tension infused as it was, and you know. So I can understand to some degree how that happens. And then there are some people, who just, they're so sort of repressed and shut down that, and actually it's like really difficult to kind of work with those folks. I'm like, okay, we're gonna open up here, we're gonna take some risks here.
Right,
and it's like, they're just like, you're like, they're so tense.
Yeah.
But they also are, there's that yearning in them for something that they don't even know what it is.
Right.
So it's, it's a lot of, there's a whole spectrum of kind of experiences, but, certainly, I mean, there are people who are, they're so repressed, they wouldn't dream of coming to see someone like me.
Yeah.
Or you're talking about it. Yeah, and on the flip side, though, is we built an entire industry about, you know, sending the first rope kit to a couple who, like, we need to try some danger.
Yeah.
And find the safest place to it.
Yeah.
So it's not just, they're so, you know, repressed that we must go now out just to seek out, you know, different relationships, but also change within the relationships as well.
True.
Mm-hmm.
So
true.
It's not just, you know, all or nothing.
Right.
And all of us grow into our sexual identities. I mean, Monk, when you and I spoke during your podcast, you talked about your personal journey from, being a missionary man kind of guy to
like
the pervert that you are today.
Yes, using my elbows right in your pack, you know? Yeah, you're not going to edit that out. Right in the pack.
Don't get me started talking about weights on anyone's balls. I'm just going to say.
Oh, you're just going to go? Are we going there?
We're not going there.
Oh,
we're
honey.
Not going there. Anyway. Anyway, she says.
Putting her hand over my mouth.
I had a witty remark to make about this, and I've totally lost it now.
Okay, in another column you titled, What is a Woman?, you wrote, if I meet you on the street and asked you what gender I was, you'd look at me funny and say, duh, you're female. I'd agree because I'm what certain people call cisgender, which means that I feel, I have always felt, that my identity is accurately reflected in by the gender assigned to me at birth. Cisgender is the opposite of transgender. This is a useful word in the sex-positive community where people work to be sensitive about transgender issues. Even so, language about gender is still politically perilous. Let's talk about that. Why is that so? I mean, how can a person be a man without a penis or a woman without a vagina?
Wow. I mean, walk really carefully around this one because transgender thing is the one thing that I talk about that I can always talk about from the outside.
Right.
Because I'm not transgender.
Right, right.
So everything I say is only a non-scientific
and non-personal
observation. Well, let me just say it so I don't get too much hate mail. Yeah, I think...
Dear madam.
Yeah, you can be a man without a penis and you can be a woman without a vagina.
Right. And so gender issues are not about genitals.
Correct.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the thing that I think I want to get straight most of all for our audience, because so many people that I know have this, they have to be locked into this clear and verifiable gender thing where men are one thing and women are quite another, and you know, never there's never going to be some kind of confusion, but evidence, you know, all over the place shows us that, you know, that's simply not the case, you know, that that humans come in a variety of, you know, humanness, and some of that humanness is female humanness, and some of that stuff is male humanness, and sometimes that isn't the same person.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tremendously complex thing, but we're really invested in a binary, and I, you know, I think it's not a system that really serves us well, but wow,
yeah.
It's really deep.
Right,
it's
right.
Really deep.
We were actually having this conversation last night, the idea that, you know, we make these very scientific assumptions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, it's, you know, it's binary, it's science, but man or woman. Yet, as all things in science, we find exceptions. New data comes up, new things happen, and our
we learn
new things.
Right.
So it kind of makes you wonder, like, are we like, will we one day look back, like we looked at, say, the Victorians who went, oh, you know,
right.
Or even like, sorry, in the 70s, where it's like, women can't run, their uteruses will fall out.
Yeah,
you know, but this was science.
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
we in 10 years look back at this argument and this whole conversation, go, wow, we were so binary. Now there's
right.
all this new stuff.
Well, I certainly hope so. I am skeptical, but
yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah. And wouldn't it be lovely? I mean, if we could liberate those kinds of things within ourselves, you know, that for men to become more acquainted and comfortable with the female side of themselves, and for women also to do the same thing for their male side.
I recommend getting a strap on. I really do.
Oh, God knows I have one right downstairs.
That's what I tripped over.
Right.
Whoops.
And that was not a dog toy. Like you thought.
No, I thought maybe he had a bad crime problem. He had a truncheon there behind the door or something.
It was just propping the door open. There you go. So I'm just looking at my clock, and I see that our time is up for today. And I've got so much more that I want to talk to you about. Dare I press my luck and ask you to come back for next week? Or is that, like, too crazy of an idea?
I think you dare. You said
it. Here's what you want to do. Just tell me when. I'll tell her we're getting a burger.
Oh, fine.
I'm taking
you
again?
I'm taking you.
That's great. So before we go, Matisse, would you give us your website and walk us around a bit and let us know what we can find there so we can visit you during the week?
Well, I think you know, you can go to my blog, which is mistressmatisse.blogspot.com. I sort of resisted like moving that to a dedicated URL because it's free.
Yeah.
And I try to, you know, blog 2-4 times a week about random whatever that's happening in my life or events or observations. So I have that, and I have a column at The Stranger, stranger.com. And that's called Control Tower, so you can go read my bits of wisdom there. I'm going to point out that the Stranger column is 500 words long. That's
right.
All it can be.
Right.
So you have to understand it's a short piece. You want
right.
the longer pieces,
yeah.
you read the blog.
Right.
And then I have a professional site, although I'm actually not taking a whole lot of new clients right now, but you can go look around.
Because it has pretty pictures.
It has pretty pictures.
Oh.
I have a Flickr feed, I got Twitter, I got all that stuff. So yeah, you can go to my blog,
mm-hmm.
you can jump off them all out to all those pictures and the bits of things. But that, yeah, it's mistressmatisse.com.
Cool. So until next week, we will be visiting you in cyberspace. Thanks, darling.
Thank you.
Fantastic show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week at this time for part 2 of my discussion with Mistress Matisse and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is the fabulous Fleshlight and Fleshjack. Say, guys, have you been looking for the perfect gift for yourself? A gift that will give you hours of fun and pleasure and never run out of batteries?
Ma'am, I answered your question.
Well, I have just the thing for you. Once you've tried a Fleshlight, you'll never again settle for second best. You know, all you guys out there who keep complaining to me about your short fuse, well, I have a tip for you. Being a great lover, being able to control your orgasmic response and last for as long as you'd like takes practice. Sure, you can learn to last longer by simply using your hand, but now there's an even more effective way to train yourself for sexual stamina and endurance with a partner.
Well, heck, if you want to play games here, I'm working with you on this thing here.
Allow me to introduce you to the Endurance Jack. It's just one of the fine designs from Fleshlight. It comes with a stamina insert, which has extra large bumps and a tight canal. With just a little practice, this puppy will help you last longer, gain control over your ejaculatory response, and avoid untimely climax. Once you've accomplished this with Endurance Jack, you'll have all the skills that you need to last and last with a partner. And remember, these fine products are made in the good old U.S. of A. Look for the Fleshlight banner right there on the sidebar of DrDickSexAdvice.com. And look for all of my podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section, under health, subcategory, sexuality, or just search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. Don't forget to subscribe and feel free to leave a comment when you do. Until next time, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.